our actions. Yes, we agree. We are not denying that. No, we are agreeing that that people can raise and misunderstand the action that has been taken. But everything is being done in good faith. You see, we haven't picked everyone out. No. You still remain with what you are entitled to. Yes, if you are entitled to 5, we can't allow that you have 15. We can't allow that you have 10, for example. Yes, so people were going to be up and complaining if we said everyone completely is out. No. Up to now, as we are saying, there is state security. Yesterday, there was state security. Tomorrow, there will be state security. But what we have just done is the entitlement that is supposed to be accorded to. That's what we have done. That's the step taken.
So say to those who are saying that the police basically makes the government look bad because they will use this as a political tool to make the government unpopular, although the decision was made by the police administration. How do you respond to them?
Like I said, people will interpret it in one way or the other. But the truth is, the head of state, the former head of state, still has police security. If we get what does not belong from you, how should we stand up and complain? You see, what we are saying is he still has state security. Even now, we have just left you with what you deserve. We have just left you with according to your entitlement. So we haven't deprived you of anything more. We haven't deprived the former head of state of anything. No, he still has state security, even today.
Danny Mwale is a spokesperson for the Zambian police. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Namibia, a human rights defender says it is illegal and an affront to the constitution to impose a ban on the recruitment of citizens with visible tattoos by prison authorities. Phil Yanangol also says it is unacceptable for prison authorities to discriminate against those with tattoos. His remarks come after Raphael Hamunyela, the Commissioner General of Namibia Correctional Service, says it is not appropriate for employees to wear visible tattoos. He also asks that the organization will review its recruitment policies and code of conduct to bar candidates with the markings from joining the organization. Observers say society frowns upon people with tattoos because it is assumed they belong to criminal gangs, an assumption Nangolo sharply rejects. He tells me that there is no law that makes it illegal for citizens to have ink markings or symbols on their skin.
As a human rights group, we are, of course, very disturbed because that violates the rights of people to get employed. And the reason being given is tattoos, it's really irrelevant. It does not mean that somebody who's got tattoo is a criminal or whatever. So it's something really that is totally, totally irrelevant, and I believe many Namibians will condemn it as we are doing right now.
Phil, do you see this being taken to court about this ban? And since this is a parastatal, do you think the legal challenge will succeed?
Yes, it will really succeed on the basis of discrimination. Yeah, on at least social status. Yeah, but, members of our society are so much cowed into submission in most respect by the authorities, so such that they don't want to be seen to be at loggerheads with the authorities. That is the problem. And that is why I doubt if somebody will take the matter to court, and it should really be taken to court.
But do you see any human rights defender or an activist making such a move?
We would do it, but to go to court here, you have to cough up a lot of money in order to hire lawyers and stuff like that. It's extremely expensive. That is one of the biggest problems, preventing people from taking matters of this nature to court.
The Commissioner General for the Namibia Correctional Services, Raphael Hamunyela, said visible tattoos were not a good reflection of the service. You don't think that is legitimate? Why?
No, it cannot be legitimate at all. It goes right to the heart of the Bill of Rights, and specifically to Article 10 of the Namibian Constitution that prevents discrimination on inter alia on social status.
Well, some people are saying that the prison needs to protect its image and that Namibians are overall very conservative people. Society frowns on people who wear tattoos or who have tattoos on them because they look like criminals or in gangs and such. Why do you think this is improper?
It is improper because another point, and that is a very important point, governments, any governments, got no image to, I mean, they cannot be defended against, they cannot be defamed. No government can be defamed. No politicians who is operating as a politician can be defamed. And that is the point. So, as I said, it is irrelevant, totally ridiculous, that my good friend Raphael Hamunyela can come up with that ridiculous pronouncement, which violates the right of people really to employment and to not to be discriminated against.
Now, Phil, some people are calling for a reversal of this decision, saying that it is not good, and that people have their fundamental rights to do what they want as long as they are not breaking the law. And having tattoos is not breaking the law. Do you side with that assertion that this should be reversed? And do you see it being reversed?
Yeah, it will probably be reversed if people express outrage. But if they are quiet, then certainly it's not going to be reversed. But it's not a crime. There is no law in Namibia, I don't see it anywhere in the world, that prevents people from having tattoos. There is no such a law. And you cannot criminalize, which is effectively what it means, criminalize something in terms of a law which doesn't exist.
Philia Nangolo is a human rights defender and leader of the NGO called NAMRIGHT. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, while there has been limited progress in ceasefire talks in Sudan, the conflict could depend on the role external actors who can either worsen or ease the situation. Neighboring nations are divided on their support for Sudan's armed forces and their rival rapid support forces, as are some of the major world powers. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explained to my colleague Mohammed El Shenawi what role major external factors have in the conflict.
External actors are trying to establish a ceasefire, create a pause in the fighting, which can open up some humanitarian corridors. In the process of doing so, the hope is that this will create some confidence-building steps that then each side can build on to begin to bargain in good faith. Now, to move this along, of the regional international actors who are involved and who are focused on stabilizing Sudan, they need to convey to the military actors in Sudan, General Burhan and General Hemeti, that there isn't a viable military solution. You know, even if one side were to win a military victory, they face the same challenges that the military government faced before. You know, there's a lack of legitimacy, deep popular resentment, a collapsing economy, need for massive investment. All of these things are what drove Omar al-Bashir out of office in 2019, and they've only gotten worse. So international actors need to be conveying those messages to the two rival generals currently and to help incentivize them to move toward a negotiated outcome. Now, time matters because the longer this goes, the more likely that two sides are going to see a fragmentation of their forces, and then it will become a battle of militias, and it's going to be a lot harder to control and come to some sort of negotiated settlement. And in the same way, we see that external actors have their own interest, and the longer that this goes, the more likely they are to intervene and try to secure an outcome that works for them. And so I think that's part of the challenge, that international actors aren't in consensus on Sudan. Many would be happy to see a military government continue. Many of the Gulf actors are afraid that if a democratic government were to take root in Sudan, it would put pressure on themselves. And so, you know, they have alternative visions. Others are looking at taking advantage of the situation in Sudan and creating some sort of vassal state arrangement through a proxy. And in the process, Sudan would lose a high degree of its sovereignty as well as face ongoing instabilities. And so trying to find a solution for this conflict quickly is a high priority. And, you know, this brings us back to the role of civilian actors. Civilian actors represent the vast majority of Sudanese. You know, they have been highly organized for years leading up to the protests in 2019 calling for a democratic transition. And they continue to do so. They have put forward their own path for a way forward. And civilian government, ironically, that offers the best prospects for a stable and sovereign Sudan. And you know, it may be that a civilian government is the outcome that each of the rival generals can most palatably accept if they themselves can't come out on top of this. And so I think it's important to keep the civilians in mind and make sure they have a seat at the table.
Former Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok has issued a warning that the conflict may escalate to levels even more dire than those seen in Syria and Libya. Could the Sudan conflict become the region's next worst crisis?
I think it very easily could be. You know, there are so many external actors with interest in Sudan that there is a very strong incentive for them to get involved. And to the extent that Sudan becomes a regionalized conflict, it becomes many times more complicated and difficult to bring it to resolution. And, you know, these external actors, as we've seen in Yemen or Libya, you know, they have ability to pour resources into the conflict without bearing significant cost in terms of human lives, disruptions, infrastructural devastation. And so, you know, they can prolong that conflict and exacerbate it much more deeply and for a longer period of time than the Sudanese actors would themselves. And I think the other element of that is if and when one external actor becomes involved, we're going to see others jump in to try to counter their influence. And that could lead to quite a prolonged and very devastating conflict in Sudan.
Joseph Siegel is Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke with my colleague Mohamed El Shinawi.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
A new project aims to reopen the official border crossings between Kenya, Somalia, and Ethiopia, which have been partially or fully closed in recent years due to security issues. The project, supported by the British government, is designed to spur cooperation and economic growth. For VOA, Ahmed Hussein reports from Wajir County, Kenya.
Speaking Thursday in the border town of Mandera during the launch, Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua said the project will improve socio-economic developments between the three countries.
Infrastructural development is silenced by armed conflicts. We must silence the gun for the industries to roar back. We must silence the violence for socio-economic prosperity.
The UK-funded initiative dubbed Deriswanag in Somali, which translates to good neighborliness, aims to find a lasting solution to the perennial insecurity and instability in the Horn of Africa nations. Even though various border crossing points have been officially closed at times over the last decade, militants, criminals and regular migrants still cross borders with little problem. Last year, the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab sent hundreds of fighters into Ethiopia before being pushed back by the regional forces. British High Commissioner to Kenya, Jane Marriott, says the project is a strategic investment for Kenya and the Horn of Africa region.
You have numerous challenges together: drought, resource conflicts, armed proliferation, terrorism. But you also have so much that is good and positive together, and it is that we want this program to help bring on.
Gachagua assured that the government will implement measures to eradicate conflict, such as improving road and water infrastructure networks, as well as enhancing education. They said they will tackle the root cause of terrorism through intelligence and putting greater manpower on the border to catch Al-Shabaab insurgents. Kenya closed its official border post with Somalia in 2012 to hinder Al-Shabaab's movements. The border closures included the Mandera border post as well as Lamu, Wajir and Garissa border crossings. However, earlier this year, Kenya announced it is reopening its border with Somalia and Ethiopia. Somalia Minister for Security Mohamed Ahmed Sheikh says the project is timely and will effectively tackle cross-border insecurity challenges.
And in that spirit of collective solidarity, there has never been a better time to forge a common destiny and collectively participate in this project to tackle cross-border challenges.
The project launch happened a day after the security compact was signed between Kenya and the United Kingdom on Wednesday. Ahmed Hussein for VOA News, Wajir, Kenya.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Good friends of the morning, your friends about VOA Africa. Music, sports, and news.
Success will never come to you.
No.
What I can do, what you gotta do.
Do what you got to do.
Nobody really cares.
Nobody cares.
Success will never come to you.
No.
What I can do, what you gotta do.
Do what you got to do.
Nobody really cares.
One God.
Digital Mukadele.
Zimbabwe Ghana.
Ability Station. Pablo.
Fight till the day I go call you mine.
Oh, dear. Kissing me door, baby, is deep. Oh, Siri, I'm in a happiness. Yeah, my boy, would you when you be a natural? Yeah, I
from Pretoria in South Africa, and you are listening to Nightline Africa from the Voice of America with Peter Clotty. Stay tuned and don't change the dial.
Music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Mike Hovey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a presumed fool who sleeps in his father's house is not a fool. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.